he found a simple and inexpensive way to extract the unlimited supply of electrical energy in our atmosphere and within the Earth itself, and then transmit it without wires to anywhere in the world. The dream of all mankind. Except those who profit from present, day methods. He died in 1943 under mysterious circumstances and in abject poverty. He had turned the military down during World War II because of his ethics and attention to detail, as so many top scientists seem to do when they fall out of favor with the military or behind their scenes power mongers. Tesla TMS genius has only been rediscovered in the last decade or two. Enough people now recognize his potential. Perhaps his work may yet help us unlock the doors to these other worlds that yet I'm sure exist alongside our own. One day, maybe we at TMLL see another Tesla come along and do just that. Chapter 21. A New Understanding of Space, Time. From what yet I've been able to decipher, galaxies are not scattered willy-nilly all over the universe as you might imagine. They seemed to be linked by threads of energy and arranged in rows which run in many directions. Moreover, not all galaxies are linked together by the same threads of energy. Deep space can be likened to a many-ribboned highway, where these 8 ribbons a TM of energy can be used to navigate the heavens. Some space travelers 8 fear a TM their craft down these highways at fantastic speeds using the natural energy of the universe. The technique is akin to using an optical fiber filament. Indeed, the spaceship becomes no more than a pulse of electricity or light as it utilizes these filaments of pure energy. On this planet I have heard these types of ships referred to as lightships. A lightship is a marvel of technology and nature combined. It is an exercise in cybernetics well beyond our understanding. As with their houses, alien at EMS, these ships are partially living entities. A few people on this planet have suggested that some type of alien craft are powered by giant crystals. This may be correct for some, but the craft or transporter I was privileged to board was a living crystal-based entity in its own right. In other words, the body, and whatever else accompanies it, must carry a natural blueprint within it so it may reassemble itself in the proper form after the event or transformation. It must suffice for us to understand that, as with the ship, the human body must as well reassemble itself after one of these transmutations. It just so happens that the pyramidal shape is custom made to accomplish this task. The primary function of a pyramid, whether it be on or off this planet, is to reconstitute matter to a present form. We have only to study the effects of a pyramid on a blunt razor blade to see that we already have the proof. Right before our eyes. It is not sci-fi, this is real. Because a lightship is a living thing, it has many benefits we can hardly imagine. Alec explains several here. Today I at EMS science fiction is tomorrow at EMS reality, but what you see today has been played with for years behind those very same closed doors. The way light and other base elements interact with one great variable in the universe is what helps 8 make a TM what appears to be a 8 solid a TM object. That variable is known to us as magnetism. It is curious that the force of magnetism is one of the least understood. It is almost as if this last realm of science has been denied us because we are not yet ready for the responsibility that this conquest may bring. For sure, if magnetism is misused it could have devastating effects on us all, as could well have happened at some earlier period of our history. Light is an excellent conductor. A conductor passed through a magnetic field can, or should, create an electrical field. Now we have 3 major 8M players at EM working towards the construction of planets, suns, and all that is out there in the sky at night. If I have it right. Everything can be constructed from light. Its interaction with the vagaries of the magnetic phenomenon helps create all known substances. Alec also explains how 8 black holes at EM exist in 2 realities. He then continues, our sun is constantly being fed energy from the black hole at some other point in time and space, possibly even from a universe parallel to our own. Even those in our solar system like Saturn, Jupiter and Neptune, receive energy this way. This energy may not necessarily be recognized for what it is as it radiates out into free space. It could arrive here in a form foreign to us and we would not notice it at all, for we Earthlings do not yet understand pure light energy. It may be that this energy is arriving here from another dimension, so the way it manifests itself could well be difficult for us to track down with our present state of technology. Only time will tell. If this energy that is making its way into our solar system is undetectable, planets and perhaps even suns made of this material could exist right alongside our own world and we would not even be aware of them. So much has been made of this other dimensional worlds from so many different quarters that IATMM inclines to think that with ATMS smoke there is quite often fire. From what I understand, this transfer of energy can also be used to advantage as a form of high speed space travel. Once the chosen vehicle has been processed into a form of pure light or some compatible energy, these doorways in space become open to the traveler. There is very little more I can add to this, except to say that if my own experience is anything to go by, much work must be done on the human body before it can enter these portholes in space. It might well have been that I had to leave my Earth body behind in storage before I could undertake such a trip through time and space. Ever since I was told that Xena TMS people could have originated in our own solar system, and, more specifically, on what could have been the fifth planet from our sun, if such planet existed today, I have been interested in finding out more about something that is still out there, in what could have been the approximate orbit of a fifth planet. This ATM something OTM is the asteroid belt. Alec gets into astronomy theories to then continue. Out in the asteroid belt there are several other, Ceres and Vesta having been mentioned, large lumps of matter with diameters ranging around 200 to 300 kilometers, plus thousands of smaller ones. To me, this describes a planet in bits, not a collection of rocks that had nowhere else to go when our solar system was formed. What a TMS more, parts of this planet have been falling our way for quite some time now, but no one is quite sure just how long, maybe as long as 400 million years. Most of these meteorites are made up of the same basic materials as our own Earth, and in just about the same proportions, too. This could mean that our lost world was very much like Earth, which is all good for the legend. Some stony meteorites contain microscopic bubbles of carbon dioxide and water. Others even contain small diamonds, which, as we all know, are formed under tremendous pressure, so these rocks must have existed deep within a planet at some stage, not just floating in free space as rocks all their lives. Alec continues explaining new findings in meteorites, including the presence of fossilized ones, cell organisms, which inhabit the waters of lakes and seas. Then he continues, mentioning the controversial rock, from Mars. Here is the catch with the rock, from Mars. Most of you will know that this rock was supposedly blasted off Mars by the impact of an asteroid many millions of years ago and arrived on Earth by good grace and luck in 1984. Now, why did it take these scientists 12 years? It appeared on the news in 1996, to find these organic carbon-based molecules, or, rather, why have they waited 12 years to tell us about them? If that rock had been blasted off Mars all that time ago and somehow made its way to Earth, where are all the rocks that must have been blasted off our own moon in much the same way? After all, the moon is so much closer and has lower gravity than Mars, or does it? Something else for you to read upon. To my way of thinking, every NEOTMS backyard should be full of moon rocks if we are lucky enough to have any rocks from Mars on Earth. Or did that rock arrive in some other way? Most of our modern, day scientists are happy to suggest that all of the approximate 200,000 ATM compulsions ATM enzymes that help make up the human body evolved by pure chance on this planet millions of years ago. They state that all is self-generating, in other words, given the right conditions, life just has to happen. However, there seems to be just as much proof, and by more than one eminent scientist, to suggest, at least mathematically, that chance had nothing to do with it at all. What I am trying to say here. To make it simple, life appears to need a kick, start, dare I say, intelligent intervention. At this point Alec presents a short chart of the infinitesimal chance an enzyme has to pop out of the primordial soup. He then continues, if we care to go even further back in time than the formation of the Earth and life upon it, we might find that this atom great hand of chance etm was at work then, too. We are carbon-based life forms. Making carbon is almost impossible unless you have the recipe and all the hardware. Carbon nuclei come into being as a result of a very rare, simultaneous collision of three separate helium nuclei. Firstly, two nuclei must collide and, while still in a very unstable state, beryllium, which lasts for just a very, very, short time, a third helium nuclei must strike with just the right force so as to become attached also. Carbon is thus formed, but only if all this happens at just the right vibrational rate and temperature. It just so happens, by some wondrous act of chance, that this state is reached in the interior of your average star. Lucky us. Alec explains here the full process of the manufactured carbon, which in brief is, it must not mix with other elements like oxygen. Oxygen abounds in the fiery interior of a star. Oxygen vibrates in a slightly lower rate than carbon. Oxygen and carbon do not mix. The manufactured carbon is then ejected far and wide when the star explodes in a supernova. Sir James Jeans said it all when he remarked, our bodies are formed from the ashes of long, dead stars. You will surely allow me the right to ponder the possibility of master intelligence, the building blocks of life, carbon, and a place for it to grow, Earth. We have a nice, safe umbrella called an atmosphere that purely by chance, according to science, happens to take 99% of us in a TMS most harmful rays and at the same time lets all the useful parts get through to us that we need for our growth and development. The process involved in this protective atmospheric umbrella are staggeringly complex. Anyone who thinks it got the by pure accident should reconsider its composition, in a little more detail, this time. It scares me to think that the military is tampering with this fragile safety screen. Anyone interested in finding out more on this subject should investigate HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program based in Alaska. Continuing with this theme of the possible existence of a master intelligence or driving force within the universe, there are many names for this force, but some call it the All That Is, or God. Some of our ET friends believe in it, too. They believe that in the beginning there was only this intelligence, which in its wisdom decided it would like to experience life in as many diverse forms as possible, all for its own growth and enlightenment. Each of us is but one small part of that experience, as in each of our ET brothers and sisters. I do not expect or want you to believe blindly in this explanation. Most likely you have not had an experience like mine to draw upon. It is rather nice to think we may be part of a grand plan, even an important, integral part of that plan. Surely this helps explain much that has puzzled mankind about self, destiny and the world for many a year. Cosmologists and astronomers. In effect, they have had to live the lie, even to the point where they cooperate in building spaceships and using radio telescopes to search for other intelligences whom they already know to exist, and with whom they are quite possible already in contact. These same scientists are quick to put down all other reported contacts, especially those like my own, saying, no, no. It can't EMT happen that way. We think it should happen like this. The skies are not the only place with secrets that have been kept from us. This close-knit scientific community is also pretending to look for the so-called missing link in our evolutionary past, knowing full well they will never find it. Despite this, some scientists who have not been able to find this missing link have even stooped so low as to invent one. Is that what science is all about? Trickery? The next and last example exposes one of the biggest scams of the 20th century. This scam concerns the destructive capabilities of the atomic and hydrogen bombs. While these bombs are certainly capable of wholesale destruction, the much projected scenario of multiple strike nuclear weapons detonating simultaneously across the globe could never happen. Nuclear devices require time frames for successful detonation. Each predetermined area of our globe is compatible with nuclear detonation at a different time, and this timing needs to be calculated to the fraction of a second. Compatible harmonic 8 windows ATM for detonating nuclear devices in different parts of our globe can be days or even weeks apart. Of course, if a number of nuclear bombs did happen to explode across the planet over an extended time period, the effect would still be one of total devastation. Alec also mentions the function of nuclear subs. This raises the question of what some nuclear nations have actually been doing in their supposed underground testing of recent times. Could they be carrying out antimatter testing rather than nuclear testing? More details on the nuclear subject and much more can be found in Bruce Cathy Atm's fascinating and informative book, The Harmonic Conquest of Space. Chapter 22. The Rise of the Human Race. The history of the human race is but a mere blink of an eye in their long, drawn, out gaze of evolution. Even the notion that Neanderthal man progressed to the more modern Cro-Magnon man in less than 100,000 years is hard to handle. 100,000 years is only yesterday on the evolutionary time scale. Common sense and logic suggest that something is going on here which does not fit with what we have been told about the evolutionary processes at work on this planet. I am not taking into account any information that alien intelligences may have suggested happened in our not so distant past. If we truly seek the whole truth to our amazing heritage, we must look deeper than mainstream anthropology and archaeology want us to. But there is no need to take my word for it, for there is a wealth of enlightening literature available. I should point out that I don't consider myself a religious man, but all this is a puzzle and a source of great wonderment to me. If what I have been told is the truth, and I certainly believe it is, then my dilemma is that perhaps I should be a religious man. The human brain grew rather like a dry sponge dropped into a bucket of water from about 1.5 million years ago. It progressed through several different but quite mysterious growth binges, mysterious, for there was no obvious need for it to have grown past its size of 750 cubic centimeters just 1.5 million years ago. Diligently used, a brain of that size could suffice for us right now, maybe even with a little to spare. So why did the brain of early man continue to develop, eventually to double its size to what it is today? Why did primitive man need to keep pushing this development? Could we be different for other reason? The answer I was given on this question was irrevocably yes. We are different because as Homo sapiens, the end product in this brain race, we are a manufactured species. Our species has been fine-tuned to receive a soul or spiritual body. We are really two entities in one. If this is not too surprising, it is because we all instinctively know this anyway. To realize that our cohabitant is a bodiless, alien entity might be a little frightening, but we have been friends with these entities for almost 100,000 years, so this is not the time to abandon ship. We are not the only curious beings in this universe, I can assure you. In fact, the desire to run faster, jump higher or swim further comes from the one within, who is without body. Once again, deep down inside, we already know this. It is that magical voice from within, desirous of bigger and better performances, which is the source of strength for all champions. Let any champion tell me to my face that this is not so. I, too, have heard my own inner self, and I know what it likes. Our other ethereal selves have been very patient. They have known all along that we, as animals, have all the primordial instincts of aggression and self-preservation that other similar species have on this planet. They knew that we would need time to work these instincts out of our systems, but maybe they have decided our time is now up. There have been several times in human history when we have approached a similar level of sophistication to today's, but for various reasons we have not been able to complete our evolutionary course. It has also been suggested that we have had some form of civilization on this planet for at least 40,000 or 50,000 years. whether 40,000 or 50,000 years is enough time to get 2 million years of primordial instincts out of our system is neither here nor there. It would seem that the decision has already been made for us. This is it. It is as if a script has been written for us, and things are about to happen according to that script. I have reason to believe that within the next few years of our lives here on this planet, there will be open contact with extraterrestrial beings. It has been suggested to me that this will happen within my own lifetime upon this planet. It is expected that a group of extraterrestrial beings of many different races will openly approach a selected group of humans, comprising civilians as well as military personnel. This human group will have been contacted prior to the meeting, initially by subliminal message, then, as the time approaches for open contact, via telepathy in order for more details to be passed on. As I understand it, in the near future some other major event is expected to take place on or about this planet, possibly in the sky. There has been much preparation for this event and there is still some cause of concern, but I do not know the exact details. When I know, you will know, that much I promise. I have suggested there is more to life and death than meets the eye, and I did promise earlier, in chapter 12, to describe in a little more depth a near-death experience I had as a youth. Some people say that when death is near, your life flashes before your eyes. Well, I was still quite young then, maybe I missed that part. As you may recall, I was in the family garage storing away the mast of my sailboat when the rigging made contact with the exposed metal pins of a power lead only partly connected to the fuse box. I got zapped. What I do remember of the experience is that at first there was just black. Then I saw stars. You might say, well, what do you expect? But no, I do not mean that sort of stars. These were the type you see in the sky at night, but they were bright and clear. I realized I was inside some kind of ball of light. I now felt very safe. I also felt like something or someone was pushing me. I found I could look both up and down, so I must have been suspended in some way. Still, I felt this pushing. The next sensation was that of rushing through the air at greater and greater speed. Then I was back in my body at home, saying, ouch, that hurt. It was some time later that same day, I believe, that I had the distinct feeling someone was standing behind me. There was never anyone there when I turned around, yet the feeling persisted for most of the day. That night I had a dream. It's been 30 plus years and still I remember it, such was its impact upon me. In the meantime, I have discovered that this feeling of having someone standing behind me is not a curiosity unique to me. The Indian yogis have claimed for many centuries that man consists of several bodies. In addition to the physical or crude body, they identified at least three more bodies telescoped into each other. One of them is the astral body, the repository of imagination and sensuality. The followers of Zoroaster claim that man has two souls. The higher or reasoning soul, and the lower, sensual soul. He who could learn to control them could change his shape into that of an animal, for instance. The ancient Egyptians believed in the existence of man's energetic doubles, and depicted them in their drawings as standing behind the physical man. The Russian professor, Boris Iskukov, of the Moscow Polytechnic Institute, suggests that any concentrated mental effort, or an effort of will, emits an impulse into the surrounding space. It takes the shape of tiny material particles, known as leptons, which, at a certain concentration, can assume concrete shape, for instance, the shape of a person. What is more, this impulse can move through space and time in lepton streams at incredible speeds. Another Russian, Viktor Meshulkin, claims that he can create his own lepton double, visible only to the participants in the experiment, and that he can help others do the same. Interestingly, from my point of view, as a result of these journeys of doubles staged by Meshulkin, participants reported that their pains and diseases had gone away. According to Meshulkin, any disease is a consequence of negative thoughts or actions that might even have been initiated by a distant ancestor. I would like to describe a few ideas about the afterlife from a very interesting area of our globe. Almost 30 years ago, Irene Nicholson wrote a fascinating book titled Mexican and Central American Mythology, Paul Hamling Limited, 1967. By studying the myths of this astute peoples, the Huastec, Maya, Mixtec, Nahua, Olmec, Tarascan, Totonac, Zapotec, it can be interpreted that they indeed rubbed shoulders with the gods from the stars. As I read through this book and others like it, it was not hard to see more than one meaning to the interpretations of these great myths. They will be colored in this instance by my own beliefs, but I make no apologies for this as I feel my own interpretations are as valid as any that have gone before. The Nahua peoples of Central America. They demonstrated that these so-called primitive tribes understood at least 2,000 years ago the beginning of creation and time on a level at least equal to that of our own modern scientific era, and may well have understood it on an even higher plane. The sacred book, Chilambalam of Chumail, speaks not of when there was neither heaven nor earth, but of where. It speaks of a place beyond time, not merely of a period when time was not. In my terminology, this is the first time outside material creation. The God above all had to descend into the second time before he could declare his divinity. The Maya also envisaged an end when creation would return to its beginnings, with all moons, all years, all days, all winds, all people reaching their completion. They measured the time in which they could know the sun's benevolence. They measured the time in which the grid of the stars would look down upon them and, through it, keep watch over their, and our, safety. The gods trapped within the stars would contemplate the people. Note the reference to the gods trapped within the stars, for this could apply to my people, the people of Haven, trapped in a dimensional warp within their own system. However, it also intimated that the supreme god was free, while further suggesting that lesser gods were subject to the laws of time and the revolutions of the heavenly bodies. Freedom was thus relative and depended on the exact position of any particular god in the heavenly hierarchy. Some gods might be aloof from their long, cycling procession of all created bodies, others would be inside it, fulfilling their duties in smaller cycles. The Maya accorded special and miraculous significance to time and space. However, they considered that space, time does not exist of necessity, for on the highest possible level it merges with the absolute being of the all-powerful God, the all that is. My word for this God is nature, in its purest and simpler form. Nature's intelligence is accessible to all living creatures through what is known to us as instinct. According to the myths, the deceased of the Nahua people could progress into and through three different heavens. The first and lowest of these was Tlalocan, land of water and mist, a kind of paradise, of a very earthly variety. Next there was Tlilan, Tliplan, the land of the black and the red, signifying wisdom, the paradise of the initiates who had found a practical application for the teachings of the god, King Quetzalcoatl. The third heaven was Tenaxayuican, land of Tenaxa, House of the Sunday. It was reserved for those who had achieved full illumination in the quest for eternal happiness. So here we have a series of three paradises, each more perfect than the one below and to be attained only by ever more intense spiritualization and sacrifice of the gross physical world. In fact, this message has been about this planet since before man could write, but has only ever been heeded by a few. How long it will take for the message to sink in? Alec continues with the legend of the Nahua people, how they may have interacted with a race from the stars, the interfering through DNA from this star people with an Earth creature to recreate a helping hand, because at their arrival to Earth mankind had vanished due to one of the infrequent calamities occurring on the planet, arriving to the appearance of the god Quetzalcoatl. Certainly my explanation here is not even close to the rich writing of Alec's. Towards the end Alec continues, Quetzalcoatl has been known by more than one name down through the ages. Votan, or Pecul-Votan, and Cuculcan were two other names. A self, confessed serpent of unknown origin, Votan was ordered by the gods to go to America to found a culture. It appears he may have tried to return to the heavens or his homeland. As the story goes, it seems that a tower was being built to reach the heavens, spaceship, but was destroyed because of a confusion of tongues among its architects. However, Votan was allowed to use a subterranean passage in order to reach the Rock of Heaven. Most interesting.